Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, welcome to the latest episode, the latest edition of Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how are you this fine day?
Absolutely rocking here. How's it hanging, Michael?
How's it hanging? For goodness sake, 30 seconds into the podcast and you're asking me about how I'm hanging. I mean, you know, this is a family show. How many times do we have to remind each other?
Well, that's your dirty mind, not mine.
It's not my dirty mind at all. Anyway, let's get on with it. Talking about hanging, right. Now, I've been out the last couple of days. I like walking, and I've had some great walks, and I walk in Stockbroker Belt, sorry. And yesterday, I walked towards a sports field and across the sports field, and I sat myself down at the other end and had a, you know, sort of one-man picnic with a cup of coffee and a sandwich. And observed the world passing me by. A group of 6 young men and 2 women, that's 8 altogether, turned up. The 2 women pulled out mobile chairs. You know the thing I mean? Like, you know, a fold-up chair. They sat there next to each other. I mean, as close as you would sit next to somebody in a cinema. And they started talking. And the 6 guys put their bags down and played 3-against-3 football with a football, which I occasionally got up and kicked back towards them. These guys were playing full pelt. They were tackling. They were bumping into each other. They were, you know, hugging each other when they scored a goal for their side. They couldn't possibly have been from the same family. They couldn't possibly have been from the same bubble, because you're not allowed a bubble of more than 2 people. But they were completely ignoring the separation laws that exist at the moment and could possibly, if we had enough police from this country, have been prosecuted for the intermingling that was going on in front of my eyes. I mean, do you see a lot of this?
Well, it's everywhere, isn't it? Everybody seems to be breaking the rules. Everybody's given up. I think there prevails a sort of attitude of, well, 20 million people have been vaccinated now. It's the figures are dropping by the day. Are we really at risk anymore? Everybody's bored with it. Yeah. I can see their point, but it's probably more important than ever to be observing the rules now and to be continuing to protect those who haven't yet received their vaccination.
No, I totally agree. I'm in a state of sort of blind panic now because I've got 5 more days to go before I reach the 3-week barrier after my vaccination. And that's when my own doctor who administered it told me that the immunity will start kicking in. So I am terrified of tempting fate. I don't want to leave my home and haven't left my home apart from walking in the open air. I don't want to go into any other building. I don't want to go on any public transport. You know, I've avoided mixing with anybody for tempting fate and suddenly contracting it a few days before I would be medically safe. And to see people mixing like that, I mean, they'd be young people. And of course, young people have a much, much greater resistance to it than somebody of my age, but it still shocked me to see the, you know, the level of intimacy between human beings.
And not only that, but it's still against the law.
Yeah, of course. You know,
to drive further, I think it's 7 or 8 miles, isn't it, to drive further than that out of your neighbourhood to do anything at all is still against the law. But everybody's doing that as well.
Yeah.
So, they all need to get a grip. They all need to just...
Well, I'm afraid it's, you know, if you called it like mass revolt would be if it was a sort of, you know, a public disorder thing. There is a mass revolt going on. You and I both read the newspapers every day, several newspapers every day. Pictures all over the place this morning of the quayside in Newcastle, one of my favourite places to go on a night out, Friday or Saturday. And there were hundreds of people there. The parks around the country, people sitting in groups with no masks on, drinking beer, groups of young girls swigging Heineken. I mean, look, I am a libertarian. I want everybody to have their freedom. But if we all obey the same rules, then clearly many of us are not at the moment. But anyway, look, we can't moan on and on about that. What about Max Clifford, Leslie Ann? I don't know how much you had to do with him, but I had quite a lot to do with Max, which I'll tell you about in a second. Just for the benefit of our millions of listeners, Max Clifford was the super publicist who started off as a sort of PR man, but ended up running a business where he was placing stories in newspapers about celebrities and made even more money keeping stories about celebrities out of papers. And his downfall came when he was convicted of assaults on women that had been lay undetected for over 30 years.
It wasn't just assaults, was it? I mean, there was appalling stuff had gone down.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us realised when we were dealing with him on a regular basis as newspaper journalists, quite what a den of iniquity he was running.
Yes.
He described himself as the ringmaster at all these orgies, and he had so much on everybody.
Yeah.
About drug taking, about sex rings. You know, he liked to get something on the journalists he was dealing with as well, so that he had journos in his pocket.
Yes, that's right.
Because he had celebrities. I remember the first time I had lunch with him. It was about some story or other, some interview that I was after.
Yeah.
And virtually the first thing he said to me was, "Go on then, who have you slept with? Who can we blackmail?"
Really? And did you think he was joking or did he mean it?
I was a bit taken aback, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I said, the boots on the other foot kind of here, you know, I'm the hack. And he goes, yeah, I know the hack, but everybody has their price.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. And you're absolutely right. What he got done for in the end was persuading young women to do things sexually for him. And I don't know if you followed the court case in which he eventually got jailed at Southwark Crown Court, but the evidence was, as you quite rightly say, appalling. He would be interviewing young girls, started to promise them that he could get them on page 3 of The Sun and all this kind of thing. Even more, he could get them, you know, Hollywood film deals, but all they had to do was provide sexual favours for him. And he'd even have a mate ring up during their interview, and the lady would go to the phone, and then his so-called mate would tell the lady that if she went to a bedroom now with Max Clifford, she'd get a place in a Hollywood film because the person on the phone was pretending to be an agent in Hollywood who would place her in a movie.
Classic casting couch. I mean, when you think back, this was the beginning of entertainment's Me Too, but we didn't have that phrase back in those days, did we?
No.
But this has all been going on for decades.
Oh, absolutely.
The casting couch in Hollywood was a fixture in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
So I think, did we realise Max Clifford was a sleazebag at the time? I don't think I did.
Well, two amazing things about him, and you'll know this. Firstly, he was a press officer for the Beatles in their very early days, wasn't he, at EMI?
Possibly, wasn't around then.
He was. And secondly, he was a complete teetotaler. So all these sex orgies that he talked about in a programme that's been aired on Channel 4, all these sex orgies were going on, and he was never intoxicated. He was, you know, he was peddling his filth without any substance. He never took drugs, apparently. He certainly never drank, I know that. But I'll tell you the first time I encountered him, and this illustrates his skill as a great PR operator, right? So I'm sent by the Daily Express to a place in Shaftesbury Avenue in London called the Shaftesbury Club, right? Because it was a new club that was opening, a new nightclub. It only lasted about 18 months, but you'll see why in a minute. And, you know, they dished out a load of invitations to Fleet Street. Of course they did. So I go down there, right, and it's all free booze and everyone's getting stuck in. Max Clifford comes up to me and says, "Hello, Mike." I'd never met him before. I don't know how he knew my name. He must have asked somebody. And I said, yeah, he said, "Listen, I want a word with you." And went off into a corner and he said, "See that girl over there?" It was a very, attractive lady who was one of the hostesses, you know, with a sort of sash around a Shaftesbury Club and all that. I said, yeah. He said, "That's Andrew's new bird." I said, "What? Prince Andrew? That's his girlfriend." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, look, I haven't told anybody." He said, "I've got a long association with the Daily Express and I'm doing you a favour." He said, "But I can tell you that is." Oh, right. Anyway, he'd worked it out so well that when I eventually got to talk to this young lady, right, which I did, obviously, away from everybody else from Fleet Street, thought I had this world exclusive, she told me that her mother was very worried about Andrew coming home for tea and she'd have to get out the best china and all that kind of stuff. She gave me enough clues as to who she was and where she was from. I traced her mother and I rang her mother up in Kent. And her mother told that story over the phone. "Oh, I don't know what to do. I'm very nervous. You know, can you imagine when Prince Andrew comes here for tea and all this?" We wrote this story. It was a world exclusive. It was on the front page and all this kind of stuff. The girl posed outside the club the following night, flashing light bulbs and all that. And it was a complete load of nonsense.
And it would have been the end of the relationship anyway, because rule number one, if you're dating a member of the royal family, any royal family, you don't talk to the press about it.
Yes, no, I agree. But it was brilliantly skillful, if you see what I mean, in terms of promotion, how he managed to, you know, the girl posed outside in front of a sign which said the Shaftesbury Club. Do you see what I mean? It was the most brilliant manipulation, but of course it was all untrue. I have a friend who is now a female sports presenter, and after she came out of university looking for work, she did a sort of, you know, part-time job sitting in Max Clifford's office answering the phone, okay? And if anybody was talking to Max in his office, her instruction was to put her head around the door every 10 or 15 minutes and say things like, "I've got Muhammad Ali's agent on the line, Max, can you take it now?" Or, "Oh, Joan Collins needs to speak to you urgently," and things like this. I mean, he was a master manipulator.
Yeah, he was. And that, of course, was his shtick, wasn't it? Yeah. And he had everyone running after him because there was always that suggestion that he had something monumental that you didn't want anybody else to get.
Yeah. He often traded stories out of newspapers, if you see what I mean. Well, you understand it, obviously. By
damage
going
limitation
to the paper and saying, "Don't run that story on so-and-so." "No, we've got to. It's sensational." "No, don't worry. I've got an even more sensational story about somebody even more famous." That's how he would do it.
Yeah, damage limitation, that was called.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was all about trading stories. You don't run that one, so I give you this one.
Yes, that's right.
And so you always had one in the bag.
Yeah.
But it's a very dangerous game for a journalist to play.
Yes.
To be owing somebody like Max Clifford.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. He was done in the end when the original scandal about underage sex, you know, people in the world of pop, underage sex and all that. And he did an interview. You know, his ego was enormous, by the way. He felt he was a voice on anything in the world, including the National Health Service, because sadly, he had a daughter who had health problems all her life, and as I understand it, still has. So he'd be an expert on the NHS one minute, and next minute he was talking about showbiz. So when the original scandal erupted, you know, when people like Cliff Richard were wrongly accused of offences and all this sort of thing, right, he went on telly and said, he said, there's a lot going on in the 60s and nobody was ever asking for birth certificates. A woman who he'd abused decades earlier saw that and decided to write to him. Can you get this? Write to him to express her horror at the things that he'd done to her, and that decades later, her life was still blighted and she was depressed and all that. He kept that letter. I don't know why, maybe he kept it as a sense of satisfaction or something like that, but he kept that letter in his bedside drawer next to his bed in his multi-million pound home on St. George's Hill. And when the police raided it, after more people came up and said, "Max Clifford assaulted me," the police found that letter and it was an integral part of the prosecution case against him.
I clearly remember that, but I knew you were going to say bedside table before you said it.
Yes.
It's those things that stick in the mind, isn't it?
It is.
But yeah, they're almost like trophies, because there was a similar thing with Rolf Harris.
Yes.
Who he'd written letters to this young school friend of his daughter's, who the family had taken on holiday and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And he'd abused this girl when she was underage. So it was a very similar thing, almost like trophies of their achievement, managing to get one over the law, to have had their evil way with these young girls, and to be winners. But the thing is, ultimately they are always losers because it always catches up with them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And just to illustrate the depth of his fall, he ended up in jail, of course. He died in jail. He died of heart problems in jail. He was convicted at Southwark Crown Court. During the course of his trial, the judge commented that he really wasn't taking it seriously. He tried to pretend that it was so ridiculous he didn't need to take it seriously, you know, and would smirk and laugh in court and have a laugh and a shout with the reporters outside the court and all that kind of stuff to try and give the image that this is, you know, such a pointless exercise and there's nothing to it. But the point I was going to make was whenever he was interviewed outside his house in St. George's Hill, a multi-million pound mansion, there was always a Rolls Royce in the background. He actually had a contract, I am told, and I don't know the terms of it, with Rolls Royce to be provided with a car at all times.
Yeah, but they didn't need the publicity, so I never understood that one. You know, Rolls Royce do not need to advertise.
No, I totally agree.
They've got a catchment area that doesn't include us.
Yeah.
The one I felt sorry for was Jo, his wife, who knew nothing about all of this.
Exactly.
And she was so horribly shocked by everything that came out during the court case. Well, she divorced him during it, didn't she?
Yes, that was his second wife. But anyway, the worst part of the Max Clifford story I'm about to tell you. I went to a celebrity lunch in Guildford, right? And it was for a charity. And I can't quite remember which charity it was, but it was something to do with animals, right? Anyway, I'm sitting there and you can see through the window of the bar where we were having a drink prior to the lunch, and a Rolls Royce came up, right? And it was Max Clifford. And he parked his Rolls, because Max never drank, he parked his Rolls Royce outside the front of the hotel, came in, and, you know, he saw me and said hello and all that kind of stuff. And he stayed for the lunch. And at the end of the lunch, he got up and said goodbye to everybody, went out, got back into his Rolls Royce and drove off. Can you believe I put a tweeted message out that afternoon saying, you know, nice to see Max and his new roller, you know, look, it didn't offer me a lift home in the roller. The following morning, the police raided his house in St. George's Hill, and that's the last time he was a free man.
Seriously, wow.
Unbelievable timing, just unbelievable.
Friends in low places, Mike.
Well, precisely, yeah. And by the way, on the Rolls Royce thing, I have no idea what the terms of the deal with him and Max Clifford and Rolls Royce were, but he boasted all the time he had a deal with Rolls Royce to provide him a new car. So apologies if there's anything wrong in and misinterpretation in that. Now then, Miss Jones, let's move on to things which are much more accessible in the world of showbiz. What is a sunset clause, and why does Willie Holloway, Holly Willoughby think that she could lose £10 million if she becomes a victim of a sunset clause?
Ah, well, this is very simple. So this is part of a law or a contract that states when the contract will end or the conditions under which it will end.
Yeah.
And it allows agents to collect a commission from their client, a client who has left them. So I have this arrangement with my former agent, literary agent. He still earns commission on sales of my Freddie Mercury books, even though I'm these days with a different agent, because he negotiated that contract. So Holly has, she used to be with this agency, YMU, they're called. They look after people like Phil Schofield, Amanda Holden, Anton Deck, those kind of people. She has now set up on her own. She's got her own management company.
Yeah.
And her previous agents still feel entitled to maximize the sunset provision on her contract on contracts that they negotiated originally. So what's gone wrong here is that she's negotiating renewals of contracts, and her former agents have decided that they are due some of the commission, the earnings on the renewals of those contracts.
Right.
So it's a moot point in law, really. It's something that they probably will have to fight out in court. But it's basically a legal battle here. These sunset clauses are usually in perpetuity. That is their problem. She's likely to lose this, by the way.
Oh, you think so?
Because a sunset clause is a sunset clause. It's there for a reason, primarily to protect the agent when a client moves on.
And I presume it's called a sunset clause because it indicates it lasts until the sun sets.
Well, and also when the sun goes down on the relationship, you know, the agent...
Oh, I see. Yeah, sure.
You
know, okay.
The agent will not suffer for having pulled out all the stops to get those contracts for somebody who was on the up in the first place. Now that she's already upped and she's worth a lot more money when those original contracts were negotiated, they want their share of that because they helped to make her who she is. Mm. I can see it from both sides.
Yeah, no, I see that. I've never had an agent. I've never wanted one. I've always sort of done things myself. The one time I flirted with an agent, it lasted about 3 weeks. And the reason why was I'd always done my own deals with, you know, radio stations and broadcasters that I'd worked for. And then my contract came up for renewal. And I said, yeah, okay. And I got a bit of an increase and signed it and all that. And then the agent that I'd been sort of, you know, flirting with, taking me on, sent me a bill for 15% of my new annual deal. He hadn't anything to do with it. You know, it's just because I, what? Oh, well, I take 15% of your salary now. I said, but you didn't have anything to do with this. I just renewed an agreement I agreed 3 years ago, and I renew it each year. He still wanted 15%.
Well, that's why you need an agent, you see, because you obviously didn't read the contract, the small print, and you didn't spot that there was a sunset clause in your contract.
Yeah. I mean, we resolved it eventually on the basis that he'd only get 15% of anything that he had negotiated for me, not what I'd negotiated. But anyway, it was so fleeting, it didn't matter. But I understand exactly what that's all about. Talking about
it's
people
who show... It's a bit different, by the way. It's a bit different with a literary agent because authors, we don't really understand how royalties are collected. You know, it's not... We write the books. We don't do the deals. We don't go chasing after royalties.
Sure.
And a literary agent is worth their weight in gold, a good one, because they negotiate our deals with publishers, but they also keep a lid on all the resales, the licensing of the books to many different countries around the world. I'm published on six continents in about 30 languages, more than 30 languages.
Yeah.
And if I try to keep track of all that, those opportunities and those sources of income, I would never have time to write new words.
No.
So that's when an agent comes into their own.
Yeah, sure. Do you know if anybody in Antarctica has ever bought one of your books?
No, well, that is the continent I'm not published on. That's the seventh continent where I'm not published because I don't think anybody lives there apart from emperor penguins, do they?
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. They don't. What do you make of Lady Gaga and her dogs and somebody being shot who's now recovering and, you know, a ransom demand for the dogs? What on earth is that all about?
Well, this is a dodgy story, actually. There's more to this, I think. So she had a dog walker. The dog walker was taking her dogs out for a walk. Lots of people do this work. Yep. I know a couple of dog walkers. You know, basically, you're going around picking up dog poo. Not my idea of fun.
No.
But people do have professional dog walkers, partly because they don't have time to walk the dogs themselves. So why have dogs would be my question. But partly because if you're a celebrity like Lady Gaga, you can't really be out there in the park walking your dogs because you get mobbed.
Yes.
People. So you pay someone to do it.
Sure.
So her dog walker was shot 4 times in the chest, managed to survive, and the dogs were kidnapped. And she's now not only paying for the surgery of her dog walker, but she's paying the blackmailers. Now, rule number one, you never engage with blackmailers. You never pay them anything at all because they always come back for more. And frankly, sorry, your dogs are not children. This has happened. It's an awful tragedy. But you don't give in to the blackmailers. You go and buy a new dog.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. But what a weird story. It can only happen in La La Land, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Or Lady Gaga Land. Yeah.
Or Gaga Land.
Well, well, no. I mean, the same thing could happen to Paul McCartney here or to Boris Johnson or to the Queen.
Yeah.
You know,
anybody
who's got dogs, who has a walker. Well, I suppose the Queen's corgis get walked around the grounds of Buckingham Palace, not around the streets of Victoria. But, you know, you see the point.
No, absolutely.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Now, Leslie Ann, we're all in lockdown, obviously, and, you know, we want to get out of it as soon as possible, but is life all that bad? I was reading the newspapers over the weekend, and one story absolutely tore my heart out, and it was one of these great photojournalism stories from South Sudan, where the whole of the country is under at least 4 feet of water, and people are literally living in water. They have to, you know, walk miles in water just to get food and drink. The level of poverty is utterly appalling, and it made me as a Westerner feel A, so grateful for what we have in the Western world, but B, almost a bad human being for allowing that level of poverty and deprivation to exist on the same earth that I live on. And I'm hoping, you know, hope that doesn't sound awfully morally, you know, heart, you know, bleeding heart and all that, but it's just terrible.
If we weren't in a pandemic, a global pandemic, where's Bob Geldof when we need him? You know, surely that is a cause for international humanitarian campaigns to try and raise enough money to dig these poor people out.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. Yeah, you know, with the wealth that there is in the world, when you think that Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, his personal fortune is $170 billion. And by the way, I like successful people because they make the world go round and they create jobs and wealth and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the imbalance between people. And I don't know if you saw the same pictures I'm talking about. I know you read a lot, but it just broke my heart, honestly, to see people. Anyway, look.
You know why? Because that country doesn't have any oil. They've got nothing to give the rest of the world. So those countries get thrown aside, left on the back burner, because they're not valuable to us. And it is an awful, appalling scenario.
Yeah.
So, no, yes, Elon Musk and the rest of you, step up.
Well, yeah, you'd say so. Now, I tell you what I've noticed as well in all the papers I read now, since we know when lockdown's going to end, June 21, pages and pages and pages, got one here in front of me, of shows being advertised now for post 21. So, for instance, Gary Barlow, Music Played by Humans, The Tour, plus very special guest Leona Lewis, The Tour 21, starting in Belfast Arena, Saturday the 27th of November. Catherine Jenkins, performing songs from her latest album, starting in Southend on November the 15th. Everybody now is going on tour. There's going to be a huge amount of activity, Leslie Ann, in the showbiz world once those theatres open up again.
Well, let's hope that there will be, because anything can happen. This virus can take hold again. This new variant that's come out of Brazil, that could soar and we could all be locked down again and all the tours could get cancelled again, just saying. I hope not.
Yeah.
But isn't it a bit premature to be, I know they've got to forward plan, venues have to be booked, everything has to be insured and opened up and people have to be rehearsed and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
All of which takes quite a long time. So I know that they have to plan for stuff, but I can't help feeling nervous about it.
Yeah. Well, I kind of agree with you. Will you ever feel comfortable sitting next to somebody in a cinema or a theatre or a rock venue again when somebody's head is inches away from yours?
No, I think we're going to be wearing masks for the rest of time and or until they come up with the nasal sprays and the oral prophylactics that you can take. They haven't come up with them yet, have they? But they're supposed to be investing in that kind of.
Sorry, what's that?
Technology.
What's that last one you mentioned?
Sort of oral preventatives.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Or against COVID. And they're discussing a nasal spray at the moment, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, I'd go with a nasal spray. I have no problem with that. I kind of use one of those anyway when I feel the first, you know, sort of cold or flu coming on. For a couple of years now, I've had, well, actually, I don't use a spray. What I do is I mix a cup of cold water and salt, and then I stand upside down in the bath and I pour it up my nostrils.
Eh?
Yeah, I do. I waterboard myself.
How do you stand upside down in the bath? Do you stand on your head?
No, if you get in the bath but put your feet up above the taps, do you see what I mean? No, not above the taps. The other end of the bath where there's a slope, okay? So you lie in the bath, an empty bath I'm talking about, okay? There's no water in it. and you put your feet up against the tiles at the slope end of the bath.
Have you got your clothes on at this point?
Sorry?
Have you got your clothes on or not?
No, no, you don't. Well, I've got shorts on, but I don't wear any on the top because it's going to get wet. And then I take my cup of salted water and I pour it into my nostrils. It's called waterboarding when people torture other people like that, right? Because it goes down into your lungs. But it always works for me. The salt water clears the germs in your nasal passages, which are harbouring the cold germ.
But if it goes down into your lungs, you could drown.
Well, you could if you didn't get up. But, of course, seconds after, you get a reflux moment and then it spits it all out and you turn your head and you get rid of the fluids that are in your lung and heart.
I'd be a bit careful with that if I were you.
Well, I haven't died yet so far, and I swear on it preventing me
sure about that?
The cold. Sorry?
Oh, my God. Are you sure about that? I mean, it sounds a bit risky to me, especially as you live by yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, but the first indication I had of serious heart problems, I had acute heart failure in 2004, was lying in bed asleep and all of a sudden waking up in mass panic with the sensation that I was drowning, because actually I was drowning, because when your heart packs up, it doesn't just stop pumping blood around your body, it stops pumping fluids around your body and they settle in your chest and go into your lungs. And I very nearly did drown, to be honest. Because you just, it's just a horrible sensation. You wake up in panic, blind panic. And then for months, I couldn't sleep lying down. I had to sleep, you know, with like padded cushions behind me because the doctors couldn't find out what was wrong with me and eventually diagnosed acute heart failure. And then that's when I went into hospital for a heart transplant, which in the end I never had because somehow I managed to cure myself. But that's another story. Amongst these people going on tour, by the way, I've just seen another advert, Simple Minds, 40 years of hits tour, and they're starting at the London Arena on Thursday, August the 12th. Did you have any dealing with Simple Minds?
Yeah, Jim Kerr. I was a big fan, actually, of Simple Minds.
Yeah.
I tell you who I used to go to Simple Minds gigs with was Roger Taverner.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he was a fan as well. Yeah. I remember one gig, we were at Roundhay Park in Leeds.
Yes.
A great venue for live music. And cavorting with the band backstage after the show and so on. Yeah, great memories.
Well, I've told you this story before, but you may have forgotten the people I was talking about. Jim Kerr was in the same class at school in Glasgow as Alan Brazil, my pal and Scottish footballer.
Yeah,
okay?
I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that.
And the other guy, who obviously you'll know, was Charlie Burchill.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Wasn't Charlie the bass player or something? I mean, he was definitely a guitarist in Simple Minds, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah. He had
funny broken teeth.
How interesting. So Jim Kerr also owns a hotel at Taormina in Sicily. I've been there.
Right. Mm. And he was married.
Go on.
He was married to Patsy Kensit, wasn't he?
Yes, he was briefly. Yes.
Yeah.
He was also with Chrissie Hynde for a long time.
Was he? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting man, but very, very interesting guys. They came to see us in our studios once. Now, Ms. Jones, I bet you've had a lot to do with Kylie Minogue over the years, but what about her little sister, Dani Minogue, who, you know, in a piece in a publication which I was reading yesterday, seems to think that, you know, she's had a terrible problem with life through being Kylie's little sister.
Well, she ought to have a conversation with the Queen about Princess Margaret, or with Mick Jagger about his younger brother Chris, or with Paul McCartney about his younger brother Mike, or with Prince Harry about William. You know, this is nothing new. This is, I'm afraid, the plight of the younger sister or brother. It's been out there for millennia.
Yeah.
If you have got an older, more illustrious sibling, sorry to say, that is your plight in life.
Right, yeah. And do you think Dani would have stood on her own as an entertainer, a performer, a singer, if she hadn't been Kylie Minogue's sister?
Well, she's a very good entertainer in her own right. She sort of majored in musical theatre. She was in, now let me think, there was a musical about the Hunchback of Notre Dame. It might even have been called that.
Right.
And she starred in that. I think they've majored in very different disciplines.
Yeah.
And I think she has had a career to speak of. But yeah, she went back to Australia to raise her family, whereas Kylie has stayed west for the most part. And yeah, I think that must have made a huge difference.
Right.
Well, Danny never set out to be a pop star, whereas Kylie did. So you're going to be more mainstream if you're in pop and rock than you are in musical theatre.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Peter Andre is 48. Have you had much dealings with Peter Andre?
No, not at all. He was kind of after my showbiz time.
Yeah,
that's
right, yeah. I think he's quite a nice guy. I mean, I've met him once when he came into the radio station I was at, and I quite get him. I see him interviewed on the telly, and he seems to be quite good-natured, and, you know, he's had a fairly successful career. He once married Katie Price, which I found a bit odd, because I don't think they're a match. Anyway, that's another thing. Now, Ms. Jones, when you're trying to get a good night's sleep, do you put your socks on?
Well, in the winter, yes, I do wear socks in bed, but yeah, because warming your feet before you go to bed, this is well known, it gives your brain a clear signal that it's time to go to sleep. And so you're more likely to get a good night's sleep than if you're restless. But the thing about it is you mustn't go to bed wearing the same old stinky socks you've worn all day long.
You have
to have nice, clean feet, and you have to have nice, warm socks, preferably cashmere socks.
Yes.
Which I get mine from the White Company.
Right.
And they're very nice and soft, and they sort of snuggle your feet, and you feel nice and warm and cosseted like a baby in a cot, and off you go to sleep. Yes, yep, I'm sure it works.
Okay. It says, Britain's desperate for a better night's sleep now have a simple solution, nod off in just your socks. Now, I'd feel pretty stupid if I thought, right, I'm going to bed now and I put my white cashmere socks on, but that's it, and then go to sleep. I don't want people to have an image of me doing that, because it's not a very pleasant image if anybody is currently about to eat their breakfast or something like that. But
nobody's going to see, are they?
No, but it's the image thing, isn't it? I agree, but I've tried it with socks and I've tried it without socks. The problem with socks is you can always feel they're there and they come off in the middle of the night. So I'm not a big one for it, to be honest.
Well, it does work. So I find if I'm restless, if I can't get sleep, the nice, warm, cosy socks, a mug of chamomile tea, nice and hot.
Right.
And make sure that the lights are out.
Make sure the lights are out. Yeah, well, that's a good idea if you want to get to sleep. Obviously, put the lights out. Although some people do sleep with a night light, don't they? Because
they do.
Some people are still frightened of the dark, which I can sort of understand. Now then, Miss Jones, what I was going to talk to you about was the height of the sort of Britpop movement. But I think you'd probably moved on to writing books by then. But at one time, Spice Girls apparently threatened to punch Liam Gallagher at the Brit Awards. Did you used to go to the Brit Awards?
I have been to the Brit Awards on several occasions, yeah. It's always a bit of a bun fight. Do you remember the occasion with Mick Fleetwood and Samantha Fox presenting together?
Disaster.
Which was outrageous because Samantha Fox is so tiny and Mick Fleetwood is huge.
Yes.
And then there was the time they cut Rick Astley off at the end of the show.
Yeah.
A lot of the sort of capers are staged. Mm. Classic publicity-seeking stuff. You've got loads of journalists there,
yeah,
loads of photographers, and they're all looking for a front-page headline the next day.
Sure. No, I totally agree. The Samantha Fox and Mick Fleetwood one was so hilarious because nobody checked the equipment and all that. Mick Fleetwood said something to her and he said, "Why aren't you answering me?" And she actually said, "Because my auto cue's been switched off, or my auto cue's failed." It was hilarious. But I don't know whether that was staged, you know, because it, as you quite rightly say, it got huge headlines and clips played over and over and over the next day. The funniest things I've ever seen.
Maybe Max Clifford was in charge.
Maybe Max Clifford was in charge. Absolutely right. Now, how about this, Ms. Jones? Its power to warp our behaviour gave us the word lunacy. Now, as a snow moon rises, there are stories of women who felt its devastating power, including the wife who dares to admit she's driven mad with lust. Does the moon do that for you, Ms. Jones? Should we sort of either be in your presence or out of your way when there's a full moon?
Well, it's interesting. We are said to experience heightened desire during a full moon. If you think about it, the human body comprises 80% water, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
The moon has a magnetic effect on ocean tides yes. in the same way it has an effect on our biological workings.
Yes.
So very simply put, more women ovulate during the full moon than at any other time.
Wow.
Testosterone levels also peak.
Yep.
And it's all about procreation. Now, we're going to get graphic here. Women bleed together at the new moon and they ovulate together at the full moon.
Right.
And it's known as the white moon cycle. So this is all about the having of babies.
Hmm.
So we shouldn't be surprised by this at all.
No, I think you're right. And the first people to get onto it, by the way, were Native Americans, all the tribes like the Apache and the Sioux. They realized the power of the moon before anybody else did. They knew that it was not just a myth that, you know, the moon can affect your human emotions. It affects mine, I tell you. I feel really, really good on sort of full moon nights. I don't know why, but I go out to my roof garden and I stare at the sun and I get transfixed. Literally.
Or the moon even.
Sorry?
Or the moon even.
The moon? What did I say?
The sun.
Oh, I was awfully sorry. Yes, I sometimes confuse the two. How could I? No, you're absolutely right. The moon.
They're both round.
They're both round. That's right. And they're both bright and they're in the sky. But anyway, I can mistake one for the other.
Other than that, they've got nothing at all in common.
Nothing at all in common whatsoever. Now, except that the moon only takes 6 days to get to, and it would be impossible to reach the sun. Because if you got close enough to the sun, you'd melt anyway, if you see what I mean. But we all know
yeah,
that.
You don't want to go near the sun, yeah, no. That's a whole other story.
A whole other story, indeed. Now, I'm going to ask you a serious question now, Ms. Jones. Do you think that the international relationships between our country and other countries should be, the consideration of that relationship should also include human rights? And I'm talking specifically about our relationship with Saudi Arabia, and the emerging evidence, according to the FBI in America, that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia was responsible for the death of the journalist, Mr. Khashoggi.
Yeah, well, not only that, but the disappearance of Princess Latifah and all this that's going on.
Different country, obviously, but...
Well,
yeah.
Yes, but it's all in the same part of the world.
Yes.
So we should absolutely be imposing sanctions while they sort this kind of thing out. Do you remember when we were kids?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to buy Cape grapes during the whole apartheid scandal
right.
in South Africa.
Mm.
Because we imposed sanctions. We boycotted countries with atrocious human rights records.
Yes.
And nowadays we seem to have relaxed a bit about that. Isn't it all to do with oil and wealth and whether they've got anything to offer us?
In Saudi Arabia's case, it's not so much oil, it's defence contracts. And they're huge. I mean, you're running into hundreds of billions of pounds of defence, building works contracts and that sort of thing. And you see, I have to take the view that if you sort of, you know, get on your high horse about human rights and deny 30,000 people in Portsmouth jobs because they're no longer building ships or aircraft for Saudi Arabia, is that a fair trade?
I absolutely disagree with you on that one.
Right.
I think, you know, we can't be turning a blind eye to atrocities in these countries and trading with them regardless. Mm. No, it's the 21st century. We have to draw the line.
But don't you also, and I'm not saying you should, but my view is you have to have a consideration for the way other countries are run, their values, their cultures, their development through the centuries. Some countries have not developed and become as modern as countries in the Western world. Don't you have to have a consideration for all of that?
What the hell are you talking about? These are very wealthy countries, highly sophisticated at a certain level. It is not okay to chop people's hands off in a market because they stole something, you know, taking it down to its absolute grassroots level.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but no, 21st century human rights. That is why we have organizations like the United Nations.
Yeah.
We have to stamp this kind of thing out. Mm. They can't be humoured, and we can't turn a blind eye to those things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you say so, I you know, I appreciate all your sentiments, but the world's a really rotten place sometimes, and, you know, terrible decisions have to be made. And, you know, well, I don't know, the world goes around.
Human rights are human rights, Mike, you know, in whatever country you're in.
I agree, but it's at what price do you defend them? And you'll say, well, there shouldn't be any price. But anyway, there you go. Now, what is special about the next statement that I'm going to relate to you, Miss Jones? And it is this. Able was I, ere I saw Elba.
Ah, this is Shakespeare, isn't it?
No, what it is...
This is to do with Napoleon, I think.
It certainly is. Well done, Ms. Jones. On this day in, I think it was 1815, might have been 1814, I think it was 1815, Napoleon escaped from Elba. So we defeated him. Well, when I say we, an alliance of countries, ourselves and I think the Dutch. And we exiled him. He was Emperor of France, obviously. We exiled him to Elba, okay? And
he didn't know his arse from his elbow.
He didn't know his arse from his elbow. He certainly didn't know. And he was a short arse, actually, funny enough. He was only about 4'11" or something. And anyway, he escaped, went back to France, and that resulted in the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, where the Duke of Wellington finally crushed him. And we defeated the French forces. That was 10 years after the Sea Battle of Trafalgar, in which Napoleon defeated the French and the Spanish at the Cape. Now, the reason I tell you all this is that we captured Napoleon again, but then we sent him off to another island called St. Helena, okay, where he spent the rest of his days, and then he died. Do you know what killed him?
VD?
No. And of course, it's a silly question for me to ask you because it's a ridiculous answer. He was actually killed by his wallpaper. And I've told this story before. There were very limited resources on St. Helena. And what they did is they produced wall coverings for him made from like plants and ochre from the ground and all that kind of stuff, okay? And one particular substance they used to make up his wallpaper contained nitric acid, which came out of the wallpaper during the night when he was asleep and eventually gassed him and killed him.
Wow. Do you think they did that on purpose?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I just don't think anybody knew. You know, it was just, that's just the, you know, well, it was just nature doing its job, really. But anyway,
so
there we are.
So that stage in the game, how did they discover that it was nitric acid? You know, they scientifically, things weren't that sophisticated back then.
They didn't find out until 100 years later when you know, some anthropologist or something like that decided to go and find out where Napoleon died and how he died and all that kind of stuff and try to find his remains and all this kind of stuff, and they discovered it.
Did they dig him up?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I think, just a bit like John Lennon, there is not a Napoleon grave, you know what I mean? It would just be too much of a publicity draw for people. And all in those days, of course, the problem was that if you had a huge monument to somebody, it was a rallying point, wasn't to start again. So, you know, Nazism and all that kind of horrible stuff never should really have monuments. Anyway,
well, John Lennon was cremated, of course, so there wouldn't have been a body to exhume, would there?
No, exactly. Unlike Eva Peron, who was dug up from her grave in a churchyard in the middle of Buenos Aires, kidnapped and taken to Spain. I mean, you know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, her body went, well, it wasn't actually buried. It was on display for quite some time.
That's right, yeah.
And then somebody stole it. It was missing for ages.
Yeah, it was in a mausoleum. You're absolutely right, yeah. So there we are, Ms. Jones. Thank you very much indeed. Always great to talk to you. And I just want to say to all our millions of listeners, thank you very much for having tuned in. Stay safe, and let's hope that, as Colonel Tom would have said, Captain Tom, because, of course, it was his funeral whilst we've been away, tomorrow will be a better day.
Absolutely will. Looking forward to the next one.
Absolutely. I mix a cup of cold water and salt, and then I stand upside down in the bath and I pour it up my nostrils.
Eh?
Yeah, I do. I waterboard myself.
How do you stand upside down in the bath? Do you stand on your head?
No, if you get in the bath but put your feet up above the taps, do you see what I mean? No, not above the taps. The other end of the bath where there's a slope, okay? So you lie in the bath, an empty bath I'm talking about, okay? There's no water in it. And you put your feet up against the tiles at the slope end of the bath.
Have you got clothes on at this point?
Sorry?
Have you got your clothes on or not?
No, don't. Well, I've got shorts on, but I don't wear any on the top because it's going to get wet. And then I take my cup of salted water and I pour it into my nostrils. It's called waterboarding when people torture other people like that, right? Because it goes down into your lungs. But it always works for me. The salt water clears the germs in your nasal passages, which are harbouring the cold germ.
But if it goes down into your lungs, you could drown.
Well, you could if you didn't get up. But of course, seconds after, you get a reflux moment and then it spits it all out and you turn your head and you get rid of the fluids that are in your lung and heart.
I'd be a bit careful with that if I were you.
What is a sunset clause, and why does Holly Willoughby?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.